Well, this morning is the first Sunday of Epiphany. And so to get us started, maybe we can begin with this question. So think of something that you thought was pretty big, and maybe you saw it in person, and it was way bigger than you thought. All right? Anything come to mind? Just turn to a neighbor and share a story. All right? Give you a couple minutes. Go. All right. Any thoughts? Anything come to mind? Something that was bigger than you thought? The drive to Big Ben? Not Big Ben itself, the drive. Yeah, that's good. Anybody else? What was that? National debt. Yeah. You're like, whew, that's a lot of zeros. Yeah. Anybody else? The cliffs in Ireland. Oh, I'd like to go. It's bigger than you thought? Yeah. That's good. So I was thinking through this. A couple things came to mind. I grew up in the Canadian Rockies. So when I was young, I could see the Rocky Mountains from my bedroom window. And you grew up with it, so you're like, nah. And then years later, so like 15, 20 years later, I took Karen there after we were married. And I remember driving up to the Rocky Mountains. I was like, oh, they're big. It's like way bigger than I thought. Another story came to mind. So in 1995, I believe, I played in a basketball tournament that was very specific. It was the Chinese North American basketball tournament. Surprisingly specific, yes. Also surprising, there were 3 7-footers in the tournament. Very surprising. None of them looked Chinese. Just saying. You had to be a quarter Chinese. I kind of wanted a DNA test. And then the most exciting thing, the first Chinese basketball player to ever play in the NBA, Ma Jin, was at the tournament. So everyone was like, Ma Jin's here, Ma Jin's here. So that's what he looked like. Don't show the next one yet. So imagine we're playing at a community college. It's a massive gym. There's 4 gyms. There's 4 games going on. In my particular game, a guy's going down on the fast break. I chase him down. I come around him as I'm stripping the ball. I trip on his feet. And I turn backwards. I'm running full speed. And the back of my head hits the concrete wall like boom. So there's 4 games going on. It sounded like a bowling ball I heard. I didn't hear it myself, but everyone tells me. The gym goes silent. I'm out cold. I'm just like knocked out. One of my teammates starts crying. He thinks I'm dead. So finally, a lot of you are looking at me. You're like, oh, you hit a wall. That explains a lot. So after I don't know how long, I wake up and there's a crowd around me and my eyes, I'm trying to focus. And then I feel this giant hand on my head and it was Ma Jin's hand. And here's a picture of him. Apparently he had a film career afterwards. He's a big dude, 6'7", 230. So as I'm like focusing, I make eye contact with him and then I look at his shoulder. And I go, you were the largest human being I have ever seen. His shoulder was the size of my head. That's like the only memory I have waking up. You are much bigger than I thought. That's the story that came to mind. So the question I have this morning is this. How big do we think love is? Let's try a thought experiment. So imagine if we were to materialize love, like in liquid form, solid form. How big would it be? Just try to picture it. Bigger than Majin's shoulder? Bigger than this room? Bigger than Austin? Bigger than the galaxy? Okay, just try to like picture a physical scale of love. Okay, you got it? Okay. Now let's reset. Now think of in this season, how big is your capacity to love? And then how big is it in relation to how big we think love is? And I thought maybe on this first Sunday of 2018, I know some of us have set New Year's goals, and those are great. Maybe goals of fitness or exercise or food or reading books. What if we set a goal together as a community? What if we continue to grow in love, increase in our love? Like Paul says, this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more, that it just keeps abounding and growing. It says, may the Lord make your love increase and overflow. It says, we always thank God for you, brothers and sisters, and rightly so, because your faith is growing more and more. And the love all of you have for one another is increasing. And so the question I have on this first Sunday of 2018, on this Epiphany Sunday, is what if our love were to increase together more and more? What would that look like? And so in our lectionary text this morning, there's a story where God invites us, like the invitation to expand our love is so paradigm shifting, so revolutionary, that years later, I think we're still trying to grow into this story. And so we're going to be in Acts chapter 10, as is our custom. We'll have it on the screen. Acts chapter 10, verses 9 through 16. Go ahead and read it to a neighbor, and then we'll walk through it. All right? Go. All right, let's pick this up in verse 9. It says, about noon the next day, they were on their journey approaching the city. Peter went up onto the roof to pray. So he's about to pray, and then he does what maybe many of us do. He gets hungry, which I find comforting. He's distracted. He's hungry. And then he starts to make a meal. I imagine he puts it in his Instapot. And then as he's waiting for the food to be prepared, what happens? He falls into a what? A trance. So I wonder what the meaning of this trance could be. I think it could be possibly a few things. I think maybe one, the trance means literally he was taken out of his mind. And I wonder if one of the meanings could be you can't think your way into being more loving. It's not a cognitive thing, possibly, right? Another proposal is this. I don't think we choose to grow our love. I think growing our love chooses us, possibly. And then I wonder if maybe on this first Sunday of Epiphany, we could consider this. I think sometimes we think of Epiphany and we think of these sweet spiritual highs of our former years. And that's possibly true. But if you read in the scriptures, Epiphany often is preceded by a season of disorientation, of disarming, being disarmed, because the capacity at what you're living at no longer works. And you're invited into a bigger life, a fuller life, a larger capacity to live. You could say it was Mary's pregnancy, Zechariah being made mute, Paul's blindness. Even before Christ's resurrection, things have to die. He's showing us how things mature and change and grow into love. So over the holidays, I watched this movie called Brigsby Bear. Has anyone seen that? Okay. So we enjoyed it. It was a wonderful movie. I'm going to share something that's right on the border of being a spoiler alert. I don't think it is, but it might be. So I'm just going to apologize preemptively. So Cal Mooney writes, Cal Mooney from SNL wrote this and he stars in it. And so in the movie, he as an infant was abducted. And so he grows up with these people that he thinks are his parents. Go to the next slide. But they've actually kidnapped him, and he's trapped in a basement and is not allowed to leave. And so after 25 years, his real parents, as pictured, they find him, and then they rescue him. But in rescuing him into a bigger world, it kind of feels like he's being abducted. Like, it feels like he's being kidnapped into a bigger world. Does that make sense? So check out the clip, trailer.
There are other people out there, just like us, right? Look at the grazer bugs, James. They're out there every night. The difference is we have dreams and imaginations to help us escape. And no one can take that away from you, ever.
There's something I need to tell you. Everything's very big. It's really very big.
The reason you're here, the reason I'm here, is all just to help you.
Everyone says they're trying to help me, but nobody can find me the new episode of Brigsby.
There wasn't a new episode this week. This is about moving on with the rest of your life.
Try to imagine a hero.
Just be normal, alright?
Hi, I'm James. I really like your clothes.
He's not on the bad side. He's on the good side.
So you kind of get a feel for it. And so when he actually leaves his basement, what does he say? It's like, everything's so big. It's so big, right? But for him to be rescued out of that, he was disoriented and disarmed in order to grow into a bigger and fuller life. You know, I was listening to one of my favorite theologians, and he was saying that when he turned 40, it became really disarming and disorienting because he realized he had never loved anyone before. He thought he had loved everyone, but he was just loving himself through the world around him. And he said it took him 2 decades to learn how to love. He spent his 40s and his 50s learning how to love. And I wonder if in this story then, as Peter is taken out of his mind, he's disarmed and he's invited into epiphany. All right, let's continue in the story. So as he's having this trance, he has a dream. In the dream, there's a sheet that's lowered with 4 corners, and in it are reptiles and birds. Did you guys hear this past week with the frozen iguanas in Florida? Did you hear that? So with the winter storm coming through, so these iguanas, they fall asleep in the tree. There's rain, and then they freeze. Then they fall out of the tree frozen, but it's okay. They thaw, and then they're fine, and then they walk away, totally. So this whole time I was preparing this, I was picturing frozen iguanas in the sheet being lowered. So in this trance, in this vision, he's told to eat, but he's like, I can't eat it. It's unclean. So I was trying to picture what would be something we've been told our whole lives that we shouldn't eat, and then in this trance you were told to eat raw pork. Maybe your whole life, there's a ground raw pork. You're like, I can't eat that. I'm not supposed to totally eat it. You should eat it. That would probably be the equivalent, all right? So he wakes up from the dream, and he's back in his mind now. He's alone. And then this is his conclusion by himself in verse 17. Now, Peter was greatly, what? Puzzled. So once he's back in his mind, he can't figure it out, right? He doesn't know what's happening. But unbeknownst to him, right before this, Cornelius, who was a Roman centurion, had a vision to go find Peter. So as he wakes up, he's back in his mind. He's puzzled. Cornelius' people show up. They're like, hey, Cornelius wants to see you. And he goes. So this whole time he's processing, he gets to Cornelius' house and he sees him. And then this is what he says. And he said to them, you know, you yourselves know that it is unlawful for a Jew to associate with or visit a Gentile. So I was trying to picture who is a person that we wouldn't even associate with or be in a house with. I was having a hard time thinking. Maybe someone with the flu. If you've got the flu and you're in a room, I'm not coming in. I'm not shaking your hand. I'm not touching you. So this is how shocking this would be. For centuries, you were told these people were unclean. You couldn't even go into their house. You couldn't eat with them. You couldn't be with them. And as he sees them, this is his conclusion. Oh, this isn't about food. God has shown me that I should not call anyone profane or unclean. Think about how mind-blowing this is. Okay? So Peter here doesn't realize this until he sees Cornelius, right? Or you could say in seeing Cornelius, Cornelius shows Peter's limitation of love. Does that make sense? And I wonder if we're called to love our enemies, not just because our enemies need love, but perhaps our enemies have the capacity to show us our limits of love. Does that make sense? There's this guy named Daryl Davis, and he's in a new documentary called Accidental Courtesy. And so he's a black musician, played with Miles Davis, pretty famous. And one time he was playing a show, and a guy walked up to him and said, hey, I really like your music. And then he realized He was wearing clothing that Klansmen wear. And then an epiphany came, and so check out this clip.
I'm Daryl Davis. I'm a musician, actor, author, and a lecturer. People always say to me, Daryl, how can you have this stuff? Why don't you burn it? As shameful as it is, you don't burn our history, regardless of the good, the bad, the ugly. And the Ku Klux Klan is as American as baseball, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
Hey, Frank, how you doing, man?
Hey, Gary.
Nice to meet you.
My pleasure.
Here's my great Titan robe. Let me put it on.
Yeah.
We've got members as young as 18, and we also have junior Klan members.
We would fight to the last bullet for our people.
Okay, so what can we all do together as a nation?
Help save the white race.
Help save the white race.
On this gracious great ball of fire.
How can you hate me when you don't even know me? Look at me and tell me to my face why you would lynch me.
This country has been through a lot.
It still has a long ways to go.
An awful long way, as news will tell you.
I'm mad. We should all be mad.
We have a society that has determined that we should fear the black man.
Give that person a platform. Allow them to air their views, and people will reciprocate. I never set out to convert anybody. In my quest, some of them ended up converting themselves.
Hey, this is somebody I can relate to.
And this is what Daryl Davis says. He says, the most important thing I learned is that when you are actively learning about someone else, you are passively teaching them about yourself. I'll read that one more time. The most important thing I learned is when you are actively learning about someone else, you are passively teaching them about yourself. And what he's saying is he knows that he's the enemy, and as he confronts them, he's showing them their limitation in their capacity to love. And so maybe a spiritual practice could be this. This is taken from Anthony DeMello, The Way to Love. I've quoted this book before. But he says this. Don't show the spiritual practice yet. He says, every time you find yourself irritated or angry with someone, the one to look at is not that person, but yourself. The question to ask is not what's wrong with this person, but what does this irritation tell me about myself? So he offers this as a practice. And the first one is this. So think of some irritating person you know. On the count of three, let's say their name out loud. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. But think of their face. You got them? Maybe it's a coworker. Maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's a politician. Maybe it's a neighbor. You got that person? Then he says this. Now, once you think of this person, say this painful but liberating sentence to yourself. The cause of my irritation is not this person, but in me. All right? So you got their face? Let's say this out loud together. Ready? The cause of my irritation is not in this person, but in me. This is what DeMello says. He says, having said that, begin the task of finding out how you are causing the irritation. First, look into the real possibility that the reason why this person's defects, or so-called defects, annoy you is that you have them yourself. But you have repressed them and so are projecting them unconsciously into the other. This is almost always true, but hardly anyone recognizes it. And then he says this, step three, search for this person's defects in your own heart and in your unconscious mind, and your annoyance will turn to gratitude that his or her behavior has led you to self-discovery. And so I propose that this is what Cornelius has done to Peter. This whole time, he thinks the rest of the world are outsiders, they're unclean. And it takes his confrontation to show him his limitation. All right, let's finish the story. So Peter asks Cornelius, and then he's like, okay, so why did you want me to come to you then? And then Cornelius was like, well, I was told in this vision you'd have something to say to me. So I've gathered all these people in the house, so say something, right? So no pressure at all. And then when Peter says this, he's not articulating a fixed theology. This is what I love. This isn't a canned homily that he's going to give. This is something I propose as he's saying it out loud for the first time. Like light bulbs are going off as he's articulating this. So this is what he says, verse 34. Peter began to speak to them. He's like, I think I have something to say. I'm supposed to say something, right? As he's saying it. He goes, I truly understand now that God shows no partiality. I imagine in his head, he might be saying it calmly. In his head, there were probably exclamation marks. God shows no partiality. That God has no preferences when it comes to people. Those are our preferences. Those are our competing thoughts. God's not constantly ranking others so that he can know whether he's worthy or not. That's our game. He says God has no partiality. Then in verse 35, he says this, but in every nation, anyone who fears him and does what is right is acceptable to him. So in this context, what's fearing him and doing what is right? Showing no partiality. And then he tells a story and he says, Jesus comes and he teaches peace and God anoints him to do good and he heals people. And then in the story, this is how off our partiality is. In our judgment, so God incarnates as Christ, walks this earth as the most gentle, humble, empathetic, enlightened human being to ever walk. And we judge him to death. We're like, this guy needs to die. Like, that's how off our scale is. And then in the story, he says, then he rises to judge the living and the dead without partiality. That God doesn't judge like we judge. God's love is so much bigger than we can imagine or articulate. So think of this. So go back to the initial question. Like, if we were to have a scale of the size of love, okay, how big would that be in your mind? Okay, you got it? And the Ignatians have the saying that whatever that is, God is bigger than that. Father Gregory Boyle, he says this. He talks about God. And he talks about the spaciousness of God, the vastness of God. He talks about God's limitless magnanimity. And he says this in this quote. He said, the truth is, we're so used to a one false move God, or I call it the Santa Claus God, right? Checking the list, who's naughty or nice. We're so used to that kind of God. We're not really accustomed, I love what he says, to the no matter whatness of God. To the God who's just plain old too busy loving us to be disappointed in us. And he said, that is the hardest thing to believe. Don't you like that? The no matter whatness of God, or maybe in this context, the no matter who-ness of God. It doesn't matter. God doesn't have preferences when it comes to people, period. So Father Gregory Boyle, in his new book, he talks about how he loves in the book of Acts, when he says, when an awe came over the room. And he says, when people experience the size of God's love, awe will come over the room. And so he tells a story. And so he works with ex-gang members, and he takes them off the streets, gives them jobs, and kind of does a lot of restorative therapy. And he says, recently I gave a talk, an all-day training to 600 social workers on training gangs, a training on gangs. I had two homies with me. One of them was a guy named Jose, and he got up in his late 20s. He now works in a substance abuse part of our team, and he's a man in recovery. He'd been a heroin addict, gang member, tattooed, and he gets up and he says very offhandedly, he says, you know, I guess you could say that my mom and me, we don't get along so good. I guess I was 6 when she looked at me and she says, why don't you just kill yourself? You're a burden to me. And he said the whole audience gasped. And then he said, well, it sounds way worse in Spanish. And then everyone did what you just did. They laughed. And then he said this. You know, I guess I was 9 when my mom drove me to the deepest part of Baja California, walked me up into an orphanage, and she said, I found this kid and left him. He said, I was there 90 days until my grandmother could get me out of her where she had dumped me, and she came and rescued me. Then he tells the audience, my mom beat me every single day. In fact, I had to wear 3 t-shirts to school every day. And he kind of loses the battle with his own tears a little bit. And he says, I wore 3 t-shirts into my adult years because I was ashamed of my wounds. I didn't want anyone to see them. But now my wounds are my friends. I welcome my wounds. I run my finger over my wounds. And then he looks over at the crowd and he says, how can I help the wounded if I don't welcome my own wounds? And then Father Gregory Boyle said, and awe fell into the room. And he says, when people experience the no matter whatness, the scale of God's mercy and love, he said, awe falls over the room. He says, people saw this kid, a kid who went to prison, tattooed, gang member, homeless, heroin addict, and the list goes on. He says, but for God, prison, no matter. Tattooed gang member, no matter. Homeless, heroin addict, no matter. Wounded, he saw a kid abandoned and beaten, waiting to be loved into himself. He says, we have no idea how big, how merciful, how magnanimous God's love is. We haven't even scratched the surface. And so, Vox, this is my prayer for us this 2018. May this be our New Year's resolution together, that our love will increase and abound more and more, that we will receive and live into the no matter whatness of God's love. Beautiful or ugly, no matter. Smart or not, no matter. Degrees or no degrees, no matter. Successes or failures, no matter. Lots of goals, no goals, no matter. Fit or not fit, no matter. That God has no preferences when it comes to people. That Vox, together may we have the power to comprehend how wide and long and high and deep is the love of God. That we can know the love of Christ that surpasses our mind's ability to comprehend, that will be taken out of our minds in order to love and to be love and to experience the no matter who-ness of God's lack of partiality. That our preferences for style or favorites can be reserved for things and stuff, maybe even food, but never, ever, ever people. Made in the image of God, human beings with the divine spark, so that we can know that every woman, man, child we ever make eye contact with, that there is nothing that can ever separate any of us from the love of God in Christ, not death, not life, not forces of good or evil, not yesterday, today, tomorrow, not height or depth, or anything else in existence in this universe, not morality, immorality, successes or failures, not impressiveness or unimpressiveness can separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus, the God who is greater than, whose love is so spacious, so vast, so large, so limitlessly magnanimous. And may we increase and abound in this love together. And so I'll close with this poem that was written in the 14th century that I think is still timeless today. And the poem goes like this. Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you do not do this out loud, otherwise someone would call the cops. Still, though, think about this great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye that is always saying with that sweet moon language what every eye in this world is dying to hear? And the limitless love of the Father, the relentless love of the Son, and the compassionate love of the Holy Spirit.